Welcome to Moving Averages, a new financial podcast from Vox Markets. This series will feature expert market analysis, interviews with top traders and commentators, and much more to bring you fresh insights into the world of finance.
On the podcast today, we have Jerry Robson from Follow the Money. Jerry is an economist, trend trader, and best-selling author with over 20 years' experience focusing mainly on swing and position trading. Jerry, how are you today?
I'm doing great. Great to be here. Thank you, Martin.
Fantastic. And for our listeners who may not be familiar with you or your website, can you give us a little background about what you do?
Well, sure. Yeah. So I'm the founder of followthemoney.com. It is a, we are really a fiercely independent trend research firm. We focus upon market trends. We like to trade the markets. We like to trade both stocks, ETFs, also options. We like to invest in cryptocurrencies. There are certain segments of the market that we like to target. In particular, we are bullish on, say, China. We're bullish on a few currencies that we particularly like right now. And we are bullish on a few, you know, key industries, I would say. One of them being here in the United States, for example, the growing legalization of marijuana and decriminalization, I guess I should probably say. So the marijuana industry is one that we have focused on. We like renewable energy. We like water stocks. So we have some key segments of the market that we really like to target for longer term position trades. We also like to swing trade. I cut my teeth, Martin, as a day trader. I got started back in the mid-1990s. A friend of mine started trading in the as the dot-com bubble was starting to pick up, and I started trading. He started giving me stock tips, and that's how I got started. Of course, that didn't go so well initially, and I had to learn, you know, how to trade, and day traded quite a bit throughout the late 1990s, and one point worked, had the opportunity to work at a oil and gas trading floor, and that was really interesting. And I've just been a long-term trader. I've been trading for since the mid-1990s and love talking about the markets and trading the markets and learning about the markets. Learn something new every day still.
Absolutely. So you mentioned the trend research and sort of swing trading. I mean, have you got a particular favorite, or do you sort of have a large toolbox, as they say?
Well, yeah, I would say certainly I specialize in position trading, if you will. Position trading, and the way I define that would be to hold a stock anywhere from 3 months, you know, out to 18 to 24 months, maybe even longer. I've held some position trades for 3 or 4 years even, whenever they just get – when a stock breaks out or an ETF breaks out and it just keeps going, you know, I just continue to ride it higher. And I really learned a lot by studying the traders of old, guys like Jesse Livermore, Bernard Baruch. I studied a lot about Nicholas Darvis, and there's many others. I'm just not thinking of Gerald Loeb, and of course, William J. O'Neill of the Investor's Business Daily fame. Mm-hmm. So I learned, you know, that the importance of, you know, cutting your losses short. We use stop losses here. I teach all of our members the importance of using a stop loss. And we like to position trade mostly, but swing trading can also be fun. And I would say in this current market environment, we're doing this interview on the 8th of May, 2018. In this current environment, you know, the market is really good for day trading because it's so choppy. Mm-hmm. It's also good for some option strategies like covered calls, what might be a good idea in this environment. But you know, as far as trying to swing trade in this environment, it's not a great environment for that. So we are, you know, we're not really swing trading right now. So it really depends on the environment.
Okay. So is there a leading benchmark that you, so do you look at the S&P and allow that to decide your direction, or do you use the VIX? I mean, how do you come up with that sort of your trading ethos for this period?
That's a good question. Yeah, we focus predominantly on the S&P 500. It seems to be the bellwether. It seems to be the one that has served us the best. When that S&P 500 is trading above its 200-day moving average and you have general strength breadth and strength in the market, then we like to be long the market in that time. Anytime the S&P 500, you know, breaks down below the 200-day moving average, when you start having more net losers than get, you know, than winners, in that environment, we either go, you know, get out of the market entirely, or we just, you know, we can obviously selectively short. You can use inverse ETFs for that purpose. You can use option strategies for that purpose. But the S&P 500 becomes the metric that we really focus on when we decide to go long or short.
So with the inverse ETFs, do you use them to hedge as well? Or is it purely when, say, for example, the S&P falls below the 200-day, you then decide, right, do you go to cash and just have basically you're going, you're not going to be going short individual stocks, I take it, then you are going to use an ETF type vehicle?
Yeah, yeah. And I've just learned this over the years personally that I don't particularly like to short individual stocks. If I ever get real negative on a stock and I really think it's going to go down, then I typically will buy a put on that stock, mm-hmm. because at least then you have some limited, you have some limited loss there. Shorting the stock, of course, you know, not so much. You can really get hurt. So typically, if we want to go short in a stock, we will buy a put. If we want to target a stock or an ETF, inverse ETFs though make it so much easier, even easier than to simply buying a put.
Yeah.
And so we do like inverse ETFs as well. But we don't really necessarily use them to hedge so much. We tend to use put options for that.
Okay. And is there a particular sort of technical setups that you like to look at? I mean, you know, you mentioned the 200-day. I mean, is it a moving average crossover? Are you looking at stochastics, MACDs, RSIs, the complement?
Yeah, we've actually have kind of our own custom setup that we use for all of our members. So when our members, whenever somebody comes to followthemoney.com and they join our website, become part of our community, we actually have our own trading. We have our own trading software built in.
All right.
That people can use. And so in there, of course, there's all of the different, you know, indicators that people can apply to our charts, but we have some custom indicators that we've created and use on the charting software. Many of them are really focused upon overbought and oversold. So you would think of things like stochastics or some other things. But yeah, you know, as far as like actual strategies though, I really like 50-day moving average bounces. Mm-hmm. So when a stock breaks out above its 200-day moving average and pulls back to its 50-day moving average, I like to buy those kind of setups.
Okay.
Usually the first two or three 50-day moving average bounces after a 200-day moving average breakout, those are usually the ones I like to trade for sure.
So it sounds like you're using a sort of a price derivative as opposed to actual price action. I know a lot of guys I know who sort of would look at maybe a bullish engulfing or a bearish engulfing pattern on a candlestick, for example. That's not something that you'd really consider valid.
No. I mean, we certainly consider all of that, but I would say that when you boil it all down, the two metrics that mean everything to me is price and volume. Because in the end, you know, every indicator is simply a derivative of one of those two. You know, I mean, that's really all you got.
Yeah.
And so price, volume, and time. But price and volume to me are, you know, I think if that's all I had, my system would still work. And I think that's important. You know, even though some people would point and say, well, volume is manipulated or price is manipulated. Yes, we do have manipulated markets. And I think that's real obvious. But nevertheless, what are you going to do? I mean, you're going to sidestep the market entirely because of that? Not necessarily. That's not what we do. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, price and volume, really, it boils down to that for us.
Okay. And do you use candlesticks then, or would it be sort of bar charts? Or, I mean, I quite like using point and figure. It's quite a nice.
Oh, yeah.
Looking at a variety of things. I mean, is that the same for yourself?
I think they're all valid, except for the old line chart. I mean, the bar chart is good. The of course, the point and figures are good. We teach our members with candlesticks. And so we do like candlestick charts. We prefer them. We think they're very handy, especially for teaching new people. And many of the candlestick patterns are very useful and helpful. of course, you know, historically, some candlestick patterns have a great track record for success. And then some other ones, you know, they have a pretty high failure rate. So I think as long as you know which particular candle setups and patterns are useful, you know, they can really help. But, you know, but I found over time is that a lot of the candle patterns, the candlestick patterns, you know, they work, but only like 40% of the time. And that's not good enough. You know, it has to be at least more than 50%. So I think as long as you're selective, then the candlestick patterns can be extremely useful to you and a great tool in your toolbox.
Yeah, I suppose you've got to be careful because I know from experience that, you know, certainly if you're long a stock or short a stock, you have a position, you can always find a trend indicator or some sort of pattern which will confirm your position, sometimes incorrectly.
Sure.
So, yeah, I was going to be careful of things like that. You mentioned earlier as well you're sort of keen on cryptocurrencies. Obviously, that's a hugely popular subject at the moment. I mean, would you care to share some of your thoughts on it?
Well, sure. I mean, I think it's a really interesting space, and there's a whole lot happening, of course, in the crypto market. We recently put out a report in December, and it was our 2018 crypto tracker portfolio. So we listed 10 cryptocurrencies that we own for 2018 that we think are going to do well. You know, I bought my first stock back in 1996. I traded my first option in 2002, but I didn't invest in my first digital currency until early 2013. A good friend of mine, who's actually speaking at our upcoming Follow the Money Summit this month in the United States, Trace Mayer, who was one of the earliest cryptocurrency investors, Bitcoin investors, advocates. He turned me on to Bitcoin, and I'm so glad he did. I mean, I probably would have kind of avoided that space if I had not been introduced to it by somebody who I trusted. And he showed me, you know, about Bitcoin, explained it to me quite a bit back in 2013. I started buying, and oddly enough, I guess that makes me one of the earliest cryptocurrency investors. Not sure, certainly not the first, but one of the earliest, because many people are, you know, just recently started getting in to the whole space. So, you know, as a longtime cryptocurrency investor, that sounds strange to say, but it is true. I've learned that the name of the game with cryptos is to research, to buy right, and to hold. So if I tried to flip cryptocurrencies like I flip stocks, I would have missed out on some massive gains. So all of the coins that I personally own, I just hold, because to me, this is a long-term game, and you know, and there are currencies that are inevitably going to fail. These cryptocurrencies, many of them will fail, but I think the ones that will win will provide such unbelievable windfalls to investors that it'll be worth it.
Well, my next question was going to be cryptocurrency bubble or not, but obviously, I think I know what the answer to that is.
I think the answer is technically, I mean, I think you could say that, but you know, but at the same time, I think that we are so early in the technology that it's difficult to really know where we are in the process. We're still, by the way, we're still in a world that is fighting cryptocurrency. You know the old saying, first they ignore you. That was pretty much Bitcoin back in 2010, 2011, 2012, 2013, 2014, 2015. I mean, then they laugh at you. I mean, that's typically what we've seen, you know, 2015, 2016. Then they fight you. And that's what we saw really, that's what we see now. After 2017, after everybody saw this huge blow up in cryptocurrency prices, you know, the regulators started coming out of the woodwork, and people wanted to short cryptocurrencies. And so now they're fine. But in the end, you know, somebody wins, and it's hard to say whether cryptocurrencies will win in the end. Mm-hmm. I think one of the reasons why it very well could is because there really is no way for the government to take away my cryptocurrency. I mean, this is very important. Unlike other things, back in 1933, for example, Martin, the government here in the United States threatened to take away people's gold. They made it illegal to hold gold right in the middle of the Great Depression. And they said, if you hold gold and you don't turn it in at this price and get paid this price for it, then we're going to throw you in jail and fine you with all this money. Well, nobody got thrown in jail and nobody got fined any money even. But the fact is that the government could technically come and take your gold. That was the whole point of in 1933. There was this kind of scare. And it didn't really materialize. But the point is that because gold is physical, and because it's physical, it can be taken. I can bury it in the yard, but somebody can find it eventually. Cryptocurrencies are not that way. Once I have the private keys to my cryptocurrency, I don't care who you are, even if you're the president of the United States, unless you have those private keys, there is no way that you can gain access to my cryptocurrency. That is a power to the people that we have never seen before. It is a power to the people. And so anybody who believes in power to the people, cryptocurrencies empowers individuals against corrupt governments. So when you read the Bitcoin white paper, you'll see that the Bitcoin white paper really poses Bitcoin as a challenge, both not just to the prevailing consensus, but also to the Federal Reserve, who is printing money out of thin air, of course, back whenever this white paper was written. Mm-hmm. And so I think the cryptocurrencies serve an interesting purpose, and it really will become a harsh battle between people who want monetary sovereignty and the authorities who want to take away monetary sovereignty because it's not in their interests.
No, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, my biggest fear about it would be regulation, where the government turns around of it. Any situation where the government can't tax or track the money, I think that will be the sort of driver behind it. I don't think it's the illegal use of it or whatever, but that's interesting. So, if you had a young, aspiring trader stroke investor come to you today, what advice would you give him?
So a great question. First thing I would do is I would turn off many of the opinions that are being promoted, much of the clickbait that's out there on the web. I would stop listening to most people's opinions, and I would learn how to read a chart. I would learn how to read price and volume. I would learn how to understand candlesticks. I would learn how to understand candlestick patterns like we had talked about before. Mm-hmm. I would spend time learning price and volume. I would study historical charts before I would listen to people's opinions. That's one of the things that we teach here to our members, is that we don't follow opinions. We follow trends. And by following trends, we have been able to cash in on the market. So we don't fight the trend. We follow the trend. And that's what we teach our members. And so if there was a young trader out there listening to this today who says, I'd like to be a successful trader too, I'd like to be able to learn how to do this, first thing I would say is turn off the noise and get busy studying. Look at charts. If you are interested in a particular industry, focus on that industry. I think the importance of for traders is to specialize. So many traders today, especially new ones, they literally trade anything that moves. Doesn't matter what it is, they just trade it. And that's not good. In the long run, that is not a good strategy. Everybody knows something. And so I would say to that young trader, Martin, I would say, specialize. What do you know? One of the things that I've learned over the years is semiconductors. I like semiconductors. I like global. There's certain global ETFs that I like to track. I'm a big fan of Vietnam, for example. I've been long Vietnam now since September. It's already provided a nice gain for us. There's certain markets that I learn about and I'll focus on, and I'll take my attention and focus on them. And instead of just reading the barrage of press releases that are put out on a daily basis by Wall Street, instead, I prefer to focus in on those areas that I know and understand, and then trade those consistently and focus on those markets. And I think that's the key, is to turn off the noise, specialize, and learn how to read a stock chart. I think those are, three powerful things that someone can do out there who's wanting to succeed.
Oh, that's great. So, regard to education, then, I think I've, as our listeners know, I've got sort of a mini library full of books. Any books that you favour, or I suppose Reminiscences of a Stock Operator would be one of them. Any other books out there that you would recommend?
Oh, sure. I mean, there's some really great ones. One by William J. O'Neill is called How to Make Money in Stocks. It's a couple of different books out there on Amazon. It's the orange cover. I think there's a green cover and orange cover. I would get the orange one. That's the latest one, I think. Mm-hmm. How to Make Money in Stocks by William J. O'Neill. Another book that I think is very exciting to read and helpful to especially to a new trader. And it has a real gimmicky title. So you have to, once you get past that, it's okay. But it's called How I Made $2 Million in the Stock Market by Nicholas Darvis. It is a fantastic book written by Nicholas Darvis, who was a dancer in the 1950s, 1960s. He stumbled into trading and did everything wrong at first, and then finally discovered the power of charts and makes a lot of money in the market. And so that's a really interesting book, really easy read, but great, I think, inspiring for new traders.
And when's your book coming out?
Well, we have one book called Bankruptcy of Our Nation that people can pick up on Amazon.
Yeah.
We wrote that one back in 2012. And we have a new book that's coming out called Ignite Your Income. It's probably about a year out still. But if anyone wants to pick up our latest book, it's Bankruptcy of Our Nation. And that talks about the debt problems facing the West. And we lay out a pretty compelling thesis there on how to trade around the inevitable debt problems we're going to see here in the United States and in Europe.
Okay, very interesting. So any of our listeners want to follow you? I'm assuming you're on Twitter and Instagram as well?
Yeah, we're on Twitter. They can find us at FTM, like follow the money, FTM Daily. So at FTM Daily, we put out trading ideas there. We put out different news and commentary that we find to be worthy of paying attention to. There's so much that's not. So many things are just literally corporate press releases massaged to look like news, but in reality, it's not really news. So they can follow us on Twitter at FTM Daily. And then of course our website is followthemoney.com. They can join there and become a free member. We have a bronze level free membership, or they can become one of our premium members and get access to our trading ideas. We send out a new trading idea every morning before the market opens by email and or text. And we also have a trading software for people who want to know if a stock is in an uptrend or a downtrend. Our software tells you that. It tells you whether a stock is in an uptrend or a downtrend. So it makes it really helpful for new traders, especially who are learning the markets.
Yeah, I suppose it's that emotional thing. That's the hardest thing, I think, for anyone to learn is taking the emotion out of trading. I think that's the dangers of, there's a lot of websites and brokers who offer sort of demo accounts. People typically make a fortune and then lose it all as soon as they start trading with real money. Well, Jerry, listen, it's been fascinating talking to you. I've really enjoyed our conversation, and I'll encourage all our listeners to go and check out followthemoney.com.
Yeah, thank you very much, Mark. I really appreciate being here.
Cheers. You take care.